Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:16 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 19th. Well, the S&P 500 Banks Index today was in positive territory and it has now bounced from the region of the trend mean, and that's pretty encouraging from the perspective that banks generally tend to lead, and they as liquidity providers, they should do well in a liquidity-rich environment. Well, part of the reason that they did very well at the end of last year was because of the tax cuts and also because of the potential for higher interest rates, which would flatter margins. But the contracting yield curve has, in many respects, put pressure on yields, and they've been largely range-bound for most of this year. Well, Citigroup today broke up and out of its most recent short-term range, and it's been ranging below about the $72.50 level since April. So if it can follow through on the upside tomorrow, well, then we're talking about at least a 4 to 5 month range completion. And by and large, if we look at it just over the on a weekly basis, it really did need to bounce, and it's certainly doing so. If we look at it on a 10-year basis, well, it's completed what was a really quite a lengthy base formation, and this entire range looks like a first step above that base. Bank of America has got a much closer correlation with the index overall, but by and large, if the banks are doing reasonably well, that's a vote of confidence in the sustainability of the major indexes uptrend. And the S&P 500 has continued to hold this break above the January peak. Well, as long as it is doing that, then there's probably not a lot of grounds for panicking about the market. The Dow Jones today was also in positive territory, and it did follow through on the upside. Well, what I find interesting is that it's the Dow that had accelerated most in January. It's been a laggard, but now it's turning to a position of outperformance, whereas the Nasdaq, having led out of the big pullback that we saw in January, has lost some momentum recently. Well, part of the reason for that is because some of the bigger technology companies have paused. And when we look at the best performers in the Nasdaq just today, well, at least three of the top four are among the big Chinese internet companies, or e-commerce companies, or let's just say new technology companies. JD.com obviously is the one that has fallen most as a result of the scandal with its CEO and chairman. But it is very oversold relative to the trend mean, and it's beginning to show just initial signs that demand is starting to come back in. Then Alibaba has been rocked by the fact that Jack Ma is retiring, but it has also found at least near-term support. Baidu is, in fact, the share that had pulled back least, and it has at least confirmed near-term support in the region of the lower side of the range that's persisted for just about all of this year so far. Well, let's not rob Tesla of the news that it so badly craves, and it was the best performer on the Nasdaq today, up over 6%. So that's pushing up now to this $300 area again. Well, considering that that was a rather large downside key reversal yesterday from the $300 area, today's reversal of yesterday's decline is a vote of confidence. The one I think, and it's perhaps the biggest point in favor of Tesla, is that it's already built the infrastructure to manufacture its cars. It's one of the biggest battery manufacturers in the world, and the rest of the automotive sector is playing catch up, and it may take some time for them, and not least a considerable quantity of money spent to catch up with Tesla's ability to produce batteries. But that doesn't absolve the share from the significant challenges that it has in front of it, not least with producing enough cars, getting them to its customers, and ensuring that they are reliable enough that they don't have to be brought back to a Tesla facility within weeks of delivery having been accepted. Well, with some of those Chinese new technology companies doing a bit better, then I think it's also worth highlighting that the Chinese market had an upside Q reversal yesterday, and it did follow through on the upside in here today. Now, these are not particularly dynamic moves, and the key to a key is size. So this has not been a very large move, but at least it is going up. And the progression of lower rally highs is still intact. It's really going to require more in order to really demonstrate that we have more than a short-term low in these markets. But perhaps the if the S&P 500 Banks Index is an arbiter of faith in the integrity of the overall bull market environment on Wall Street, well, the bigger banks in China have held a progression of higher reaction lows since July. This is, I think, in large part state-sponsored, and it does suggest that there are at least some measures underway to support the market. The Indian market was in negative territory in here today. It continues to pull back towards the trend mean. It's not doing so in a particularly dynamic manner, but it is falling on consecutive days. The Bombay Banks Index has already completed its reversion to the mean. So now is the point at which one might anticipate that support should be beginning to be found. The one, I think, obstacle to additional upside from the perspective of foreign investors right now in India, and it's something that a number of people have repeated to me, is that the valuations are rather expensive. When, for example, we look at the Nifty index, then the PE is around 23. So that's rather high, but at the same time, India is growing at about 8% per annum. Its population is, well, 50% of the population is below the age of 25, so there is the potential for a rather phenomenal demographic dividend, provided it can put all those people to work. Well, that's going to require significant infrastructure investment. It's going to require a clear commitment to manufacturing. It isn't simply that the recourse to the digital economy, and certainly India is well on the road to a digital dividend to its economy, but that's not going to put enough of people to work in order to really keep unemployment at a reasonable level and to really start to reverse the current account deficit. So there is a significant progress that still needs to be achieved. Well, at least the stock market is continuing to trend in a medium-term bullish environment, despite the fact that we are in a process of mean reversion right now. Quite whether the banking sector can find support in the region of the trend mean is going to be a big arbiter of just how sustainable this medium-term advance is, because the banks have tended to lead in India. Then you also have the fact that the rupee has at least paused. There was also a downside Q reversal for the dollar 5 sessions ago, but not a great deal of follow-through. Then the breakdown to new lows yesterday has not been sustained. Well, when we look at this on a longer-term basis, we can see very clearly that there is a short-term overbought condition for the US dollar, and there is ample potential for it to be unwound. I've seen an increasing number of articles claiming that the dollar's rally is over. But when I look at the dollar index, I can see that the dollar has certainly pulled back over the course of the last month. It is testing the region of the progression of higher reaction lows, but it hasn't really broken them just yet. So, and I think that is also part of the reason why it's still looking kind of touch and go when we look at gold prices. The dollar has been consolidating above the trend mean for the last few months, but it has not pulled back below the trend mean. It hasn't broken the progression of higher reaction lows. So, while there is potential for the dollar to lose some of its impetus, not least because the selling pressure has been so aggressive in emerging markets that that bargain hunters are beginning to come back in, that will result in less demand for dollars. Well, that's one argument. Then there is also the point that an increasing number of reports have been written about that on September 15th, the deadline for when corporations could write off pension contributions at last year's corporate tax rate rather than this year's, well, that passed. So obviously there was a fairly big incentive to write off as much as possible ahead of the deadline. That's part of the reason why we've had the breakout in treasury yields. This is a rather big move. Now the question is whether it is going to be sustained. The last time we had a break above 3%, it didn't hold for more than a week. And now the big question is whether we're back in a supply-dominated environment. The fact that yields have been ranging for just about all of this year is representative of the fact that the argument, or the bullish and bearish arguments, have returned to a certain equilibrium. And one of the reasons why there was demand is because the dollar was firm, and you had the interest rate differential, so you had the currency and the interest rate differential working in a foreign investor's favor. The other side of the argument is that there's lots of additional supply. Well, the third strut to the argument was that with all the buybacks and this tax arbitrage that expired on September 15th, well, that also created demand for bonds. It also created demand for stocks, but stocks have not reacted in the same way as bonds have. And quite whether that is enough to tip the balance of supply and demand back into a supply-dominated environment, we'll find out in the next day or two. One point, though, is that while we tend to think about, and the commentators really do tend to think about the minutiae of what is going on a day-to-day basis in the bond markets, the much bigger picture is that the total return on bonds has been trending lower since 2016, and this represents a very significant loss of uptrend consistency relative to the very consistent advance that persisted all the way from the early 1980s. This is one of the longest and most impressive bull markets in history, and we are on the cusp potentially of seeing it ending. When the most consistent trend in the world becomes inconsistent, well, we have to at least pay due consideration to the fact that the imbalance between supply and demand that helped to drive the bull market has not just ended but reversed. That's a one of the major reasons why, at least in my opinion, that we have had a rise in populism. That one of the things that has kept the play along to get along way of administering major economies has been to borrow more and to increase the social benefits of that people can enjoy within a society. But if yields are rising, then that gravy train is not going to persist any longer. And we're already starting to see that, where we've had, particularly in Europe and in the USA, where there have been lower standards of living, and that is going to exacerbate the gap between the haves and the have-nots. So there are some very meaningful both market and social implications of the end of a secular bull market in bonds, and that I think is something that we'll be exploring for decades to come. But when we look at gold, it was a little bit firmer in here today. It is back above the $1,200 area, and it is at least going sideways for a little bit longer than at any time it's done since May. But it really does need to break up and out of this range to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So the longer it goes sideways for, the less of an overextension relative to the trend mean that's evident. So it is still very much for the bulls to prove. Now, when I did write about midpoint danger line stops in Comment of the Day yesterday and highlighted the platinum price. Well, platinum has not closed yet above 825, and that would be the midpoint of this overhead trading range that persisted between the beginning of July and the middle of August. If it can break through the 825 area, well, then it will have broken the progression of lower rally highs. It will have broken the downtrend since January, and we can start to talk about more than a very short-term low. That would also greatly increase the potential for a reversion back towards the mean. And even if we were to get that, well, we could start to think about the fact that $800 has been an area of support on multiple occasions over the last decade, and this may be another one of those instances. Silver prices have also had this staircase step sequence downtrend, and the ranges so far have been in the order of approximately 60 cents. This range that's persisted in September has been slightly narrower than the previous ranges, but those ranges are still one below another, so it's going to have to sustain a move above 1475 to really break that downtrend. And so far, it hasn't quite been able to do that. But there's no denying that prices have come down a lot already, and they are starting to represent value from a significant number of perspectives. The low that we saw at the end of 2015 is now being approximated by prices, and we're at a point where silver and the marginal cost of production is not so far away from these prices. So we're quickly getting to a situation where it's going to be uneconomic to mine silver. Then, when we look at the oil price, well, WTI was up about a dollar in here today, and Brent crude continues to pause around or just below this $80 area. But it looks increasingly likely that the oil price will be doing better from here. Now, when we think about what exactly is going on in the emerging markets, well, the Argentine peso has continued to stabilize around the 40 level, and that's certainly supported by 60% short-term interest rates. Then, if we look at the Turkish lira, it has now got a higher reaction low. Now, that's a lower rally high for the dollar, and it was a little bit steadier in here today. When we look at, for example, an ETF, and sorry, not typing very well, the ETF, which is pound denominated in this case, has at least paused, and it's continued to hold this 1000 p level. Well, it's not so long ago that it was at 2000 p, and there is a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean. But what I find interesting is that it is the smaller cap markets like Thailand and Malaysia or Vietnam that do not represent very large weightings in the emerging markets index that have tended to be doing better. So what that also suggests is that there are some green shoots that we might conclude that demand is starting to come back into the emerging markets, but not in a big money way just yet, because we haven't had big dynamic moves in markets like China. Then we also have to keep an eye on Brazil, because there's a significant number of large companies there that represent big weightings in the emerging markets index. And I would hesitate to say that it's all clear just yet. But when we look at the Brazilian real, well, it has continued to hold this 4.2 area. This range has begun to unwind at least part of the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. There is potential that it will rally through the 4 level, but this continues to represent a risky environment, not least because of the uncertainty around the election. Then, if we look at the South African rand, well, it had weakened all the way up towards 16, and it has now started to steady up again. Well, today was a reasonably dynamic move. It really has to strengthen through 14 to break the dollar's uptrend. Then, when we look at what's going on in Australia, the Australian dollar has now pushed back above the 72 cent level. It's been trending lower most of the year, and these ranges are also one below another. So the most recent range was between about 72 and 74. So 73 is going to be a big level that if the Aussie dollar can sustain a move through it, well, then we can start to talk about the downtrend having been broken, but probably not really before. Then if we look at what's going on in terms of the Australian bond markets, I think it's useful to highlight that we're getting more commonality starting to come through in government bonds, that Australian government bonds are starting to push back above the trend mean. They're bouncing from the lower side of the 18-month range, but the big psychological level here as well is 3%. Then if we look at the UK gilt, well, gilts have also been range-bound, but they are now coming right back up towards the upper side of the range. Then if we look at the Bund in Germany, it has also steadied, and it has rallied today to break the progression of lower rally highs since the beginning of this year, and that's now confirming resistance for prices at the lower side of this range. Well, what that starts to highlight is that we're getting commonality coming through in not just in treasuries or in the US markets, but right across the government bond markets. And well, that is, I think, further evidence that investors are starting to get a little leery of the bond markets, not least because there is so much additional supply that's coming through from the US. So I think when we take a bit of a step back, we're still presented with a reasonably consistent trending environment on Wall Street, but that there is a short-term overbought condition, so it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we might see some pause in consolidation. But then if we look at the emerging markets, we've had a very substantial drawdown, and we're starting to see increasing evidence that this market is starting to come back to a position where people will look at it as a buying opportunity, at least on a piecemeal basis to begin with. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.